Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today, we have an absolutely extraordinary program and group of people. Let's start with my sometimes co-host, John Galloway, who is a technical evangelist at Microsoft. John, how are you?
I'm doing great today. It is nice and warm here. We actually have a drought.
Don't tell me that, because we've got snow, and I'm not joking. This morning when I woke up, it was -4 without the wind chill, which is just, and that was Fahrenheit. It's just not fair. We also have Scott Hunter, who works on the web platform and tools at Microsoft and is extremely well known to everybody listening to this. Scott, how are you?
I am doing great. I wish we actually had snow. We've only had one day of snow this year in the Redmond area, and we would love to have more. My kids would love to have more. So would I.
And I would like to have less, so maybe we can work something out after this. And Ward Bell, who is a frequent guest. Ward is a VP of technology at IdeaBlade, and he is a principal behind Breeze.js, a client library for data management and known throughout the MVP world as a snappy dresser. Ward, how are you?
I, like the weather here in San Francisco, am warm and sunny.
All three of you are on the West Coast and are extremely welcome. What I really wanted to do was to start the conversation about the relationship between MVC and Angular. How they see each other, are they competitive, are they alternatives to each other, are they complementary? How does that come together for folks? And I think if we could start with you, Scott, and get your perspective, that would be great.
Yeah, well, my perspective is probably more than just a perspective. I want to talk about where we see this whole Angular thing in the future and how we at Microsoft are looking at it.
Okay.
And so, you know, if you look at the history of our web platform, we came out with web forms in 2002, 2003-ish time frame. And then as we've seen the web evolve over time, we've always adjusted accordingly. So in 2008, we introduced MVC. Then a few years later, we introduced Web API when we saw devices becoming prominent. We saw real-time being something that people were starting to delve into, and so we did SignalR. And when I start looking at what the next big thing is for us, the next big thing that we see web developers going is building a lot more logic in the client tier. So, you know, building a lot more JavaScript running in the browser that talks to some backend, you know, hopefully a .NET backend on a server. And so that's actually the big focus. One of the big focuses of our team this next year is how do we take a technology like AngularJS and build tooling inside of Visual Studio that can make the audience for AngularJS the same type of audience that uses MVC and web forms today. And so we look at this as a very interesting space from that perspective. And so we're going to do a bunch of work across our HTML, JavaScript, CSS editors to make that a first-class experience.
So that's extremely exciting news. Tell me about what that would look like for the programmer. Would that be an integration of Angular itself, or would that be another rich client tool or language or framework that's actually part of the ASP.NET stack?
Microsoft and our team's kind of approach to these kinds of things today is a lot different than it was maybe 10 years ago. Today, we were just going to go look at and go, what client-side framework is the most popular and most people are using today? And right now, that looks like that's AngularJS. And so what we want to do is find ways to make it easy for a customer, one of our customers, to start using AngularJS when they're building an application. So here's a hypothetical walkthrough that might happen. Let's say you create a brand new HTML page in Visual Studio. And today we have a toolbox in Visual Studio where you see a list of controls that you can drag onto a page. What if instead, when you're on an HTML page, a bunch of ideas of tasks that you could do showed up in that pane? And one of those tasks could be, hey, I want to enable a rich, modern client-side framework in this page. And if you click that, we would either show you how to add the ng-app attribute to your page, or we would do it for you. And then that list of suggestions would change and show a different list of suggestions. And it could be that, hey, I want to show some data in this page from my back end. And if you select that, we would walk you through creating a template inside of your page, or an Angular repeater, repeating over some data. We'd create a controller for you, and we'd wire the controller up to a web API backend. We also think there's a bunch of interesting things that we could do if we integrated Angular with TypeScript. As soon as you take the scopes that you have in Angular and you put a colon next to them and a type, we can then provide you rich intelligence as you flow through the system. So as I said, I can't say what all the tooling is going to be, but we want to make that experience, you know, writing JavaScript with Angular in Visual Studio, a first-class experience. And then figuring out, you know, I think which is the question of this entire podcast is to figure out what that means. What if I'm an MVC customer today? I'm an ASP.NET MVC customer, and I've got a bunch of controllers and views and stuff like that. What does it mean to add Angular to that application? How do you mix and match these things? These things are actually interesting to mix and match because Angular's got its own routing system. MVC's got its own routing system. Angular kind of likes to take over the root URL of your website and then use hashtags to actually navigate through the routing space, while we end up in MVC end up having separate pages. How do you marry those two worlds together? How do you enable a customer to take an MVC application and Angularify some of the pages without doing all of the application? Those are all the kinds of things that we're looking at investigating and trying to figure out.
Ward, you spend more time in Angular land than any of the rest of us. Does this sound promising to you?
Absolutely, it does. And in particular, the thought that people have existing MVC applications and want to sort of dip into this pond, the single page app pond, one toe at a time. And they can't just convert everything, and they may not, and it may make no sense to convert everything. So you do have to kind of make these transitions at various points to, you know, staying MVC for a while and then doing something else, and maybe even you're doing web forms for a while because it's the old one ASP.NET, right, Scott?
Correct.
And I think people do like the idea of, but I do see it. I mean, we see these. I've got customers coming to me today talking about how the struggles that they have with a particular web page that they would like to have more client-side computing on it. And so it's effectively a mini spa within the context of their larger MVC app. And then maybe at some point they'll want to connect two of what are today separate pages in MVC and really see those as part of a single spa. And so then that's where you get into those potential routing conflicts that I think Scott's talking about there. And that stuff all has to be worked out, but they sure could use some guidance in how to navigate among these things. And I think I really like the idea that the tooling could offer me some higher level tasks. I'd love the really micro stuff too, so that I can just type a little bit and then it spits out controller boilerplate for me and stuff like that. But I think that what Scott's alluding to is some higher level tasks where many more of the pieces are scaffolded out for you. And there's room for an entire spectrum of that kind of stuff in here if it could just be done in a coherent way. And that's a challenge, but I think it's an opportunity.
That is the challenge. The challenge is we want to provide value, but not get in your way either. We don't want to do too much, and we want to let you choose what you want. It could be that you do snippets and you type three letters, as Ward was saying, and we spit out a controller for you. Or it could be that if you choose the higher level version, which is I want a repeater and a controller, and given a web API, you give me those things, and we'll wire them all up. Other interesting things, and Ward's framework does some of this as well. I think once you get past that flow, we also want to make all the things that we do in the .NET world work well in this world. So, for example, today on the server side, I've got my .NET objects, my POCO objects, and I can put, you know, data validation annotations on those things, and then our server side frameworks will honor those. They'll validate them before they're saved to a database with an EDG framework. MVC today will validate those on the server itself as part of looking at your controller, and potentially we'll do the validation on the client as well. Today we do that with jQuery Validate. But we want to make that same capabilities available to the Angular guy as well. So maybe there's a world in the future that when you build one of these POCO classes that you put some kind of attribute on it, and when we do, we automatically project a JavaScript version of that as well that you can then use on the JavaScript side. So you will get rich IntelliSense. You've got a Vue model in the JavaScript side, and you know we flow the same annotations over to that side, so you have the same validation metadata, and we can do validation in Angular on the client side as well. Not sure what that looks like, but that's another area that we want to tackle as well.
This makes a lot of sense to me, particularly as one starts to think about development teams that want, and so if this tooling is set up in such a way that it can be shaped for a team, put together the sort of the cookbook of things that they like to do in their shop in the way that they like to do it, and maybe even some of the conventions that they like to have, then they won't be overwhelmed by all the possibilities that anybody could do. They'll just sort of lay out practices that they would like tooled for their shop, and then they could know that it would speed it up for everybody, but all the developers would have a chance of doing most things the same way, and that's kind of a holy grail for development teams.
Well, yeah, I think that's sort of the step that you make as you move, as Scott talked about the list of things, with web forms, it was very prescriptive and you just kind of did one thing. You did web forms development. And yeah, there were some hooks, but it was basically there was one way to do it. And then with MVC, a lot of things improved, but there was a little bit more of like, well, where do you put your services at, or where do you put in your validation? And, and there's different places you can do those sorts of things and hook in. And then as you start moving into client server development, with Angular or other front end frameworks, then you have this combinatorial thing of, where are you managing data? How are you initializing data? Are you passing all the data down with your HTML, or is it always a separate fetch? And, and then what packages of JavaScript frameworks you're using as well, because nobody does just one usually, that's like, especially you're layering on all these other JavaScript libraries. So as Ward's saying, that kind of thing of lumping things together or prescribing inside our shop, well, we use, these three things together, could be really helpful. And I'm already seeing, talking about the idea of tooling. And I know some people get a little worried of like, oh, I don't want, this heavy experience and things to get in the way. But I'm already seeing things like, Bootstrap IntelliSense as being like just a really nice add-on. It's lightweight, but Bootstrap IntelliSense and Visual Studio 2013 and Web Essentials, I'm like so much more productive because I'm not hunting around for what is that specific class name, I can see that going really a lot further.
That's really in spades when it comes to, say, the Angular Vue model, which you're surfacing. The people who know Angular know that at a certain point you're sort of saying, hey, I'm building this template, this HTML template, around a particular Vue model, and now I'm doing all these bindings. And one of the great time wasters is remembering what the name of something is in your Vue model and how it's spelled. And to just be able to have that surfaced there, because the tooling underneath understands the pathway back to the definition of the Vue model, or the controller, as many Angular people refer to it. But to be able to surface that UI as your binding is it's just things like that. It's an accumulation of value like that that makes that a much more effective development space than if you're trying to root around in a glorified version of Notepad.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm noticing, I've been watching through this AngularJS for .NET Developers Pluralsight course, which I think is really good. It's Joe Eames and Jim Cooper. But it's funny, a lot, I would say, there are several times where they'll run through and they'll refresh and say, oh, that didn't work. Oh, I misspelled, the name of my controller. Oh, I misspelled this or that, And it's like basically all the errors are everything just flows in the code except for a few little minor misspellings, and then it's like, oh, what's not hooked up right,
Exactly. I had the same thing happened to me this past weekend. I was actually hacking around in Angular, and I broke my app. And when I broke my app, my browser just displayed a blank page. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, what did I do? That I know I had a JavaScript error somewhere, and when it caused the flow of execution to stop, the page just doesn't render at all. And it's not like, ASP.NET where you get a nice, stack dump on the browser, you get nothing. And so it was interesting. I want to bring up another point. If there's people on the that are listening in that don't know what AngularJS is, as I've learned about Angular, Angular reminds me a lot of web forms, but written for client side. It has all the same things that we have in web forms today. It has routing, it has data binding, it has the notion of building, even if you want to build a control, I would actually argue that an Angular directive is very controllish from the standpoint you can put some template markup in there, you can attach events to it, you can even make your directive actually just be an HTML tag, very similar to how our web form controls are HTML tags with ASP colon in front of them. And so as a web developer, it just feels like Angular is kind of like web forms for client to me. I don't know if Ward or anybody else has played with web forms and has a lot of experience with it and drew that same parallel or not.
I'm sure that resonates for a lot of the audience. I come from a different perspective, which I think is also something that you're targeting. I come from the part of .NET, which was the desktop development side. So I was with WinForms and then WPF and Silverlight, and I'm coming at it from that way. And I think that's a community that you're hoping to target, because those folks are gravitating towards a web delivery vehicle that is still heavy on the client side execution. So I don't have the web forms experience, but I see where you're going there, because you're right. A directive can effectively create a tag that represents a control, if you will, and so I see where you're going with that.
And the other thing that draws them together is that Angular sees itself as MV whatever, and that combination of the MVC/MVVM perspective, I think, helps a lot with bringing in the two communities that you're describing.
Now, one difference is that there's not this C# code behind. So that's where the analogy breaks down. And for many people, they're glad to hear that it breaks down in that way, because ultimately, whatever it is that you're laying in there is something that you can see and change, and it is not mystery code.
Yes, well, I'll tell you that working with JavaScript extensively lately, my kingdom for both type safety and a compile step, and I'm thinking more and more about TypeScript as perhaps solving some of those problems. And it was interesting to hear you say, Scott, that might be a major factor in the way you approach it.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be. Here's how we look at it. We think that if we take Angular and TypeScript and put them together, we can provide a much better developer experience, because you're going to find some of these JavaScript errors earlier because of the type safety. But I want to also point out, we're not going to force you down that path. It's just going to be that we think it is probably the right path, especially if you're coming from the C# world and you're used to getting rich IntelliSense and rich errors. Just by putting a colon and a type on some of your parameters to your JavaScript functions suddenly just ushers in a world where you get a much better experience. And it doesn't seem like you're losing a lot or we're hurting you by doing that. You know, you don't have to have the colon and your type. So it seems like you get a lot with not a lot of effort. And so I think it will be our default, but if you want to go rip that stuff off or tell us not to put it on, we'll definitely give you the option to do that. But I think, as you said, if you're, you know, custom to using Visual Studio and getting all the rich editor experiences that you've got over the last, you know, 10 years building applications on .NET, you know, going into a typeless JavaScript world where something just doesn't work, it's just because you named it wrong, you misspelled it, and you won't know until you go dig around and find that. So I do think there's a lot of value that we can add with TypeScript in this world. But as I said, it'll be optional.
Now, we've been focused on what's coming, and what's coming sounds terrific, but I'm guessing that it's not right around the corner, that we're looking out a period of upwards of a year. And I'm wondering about your perspective on today and how people make decisions between a more server-oriented perspective and a more client-oriented perspective, and how those technologies work together today.
So my sense, and John, you've been seeing this too, is that people are expecting to do more in the browser, more on the client, and rely on the server for data services and the sort of the initial HTML, and it sort of just serve things up. But to try and get more state and more application, sort of UI logic, not business logic, but UI logic, out on the client. And a library like Angular really facilitates that. Now, it's kind of a spectrum. So it's really quite possible to have a single MVC page use Angular to put more of the logic of what's happening on that page, you know, have that executing down on the client. It makes it a lot easier to write that. I'm looking at, for example, some code of a client. It's a razor page of some several thousand lines, And they're clearly wanted to have the interaction pattern down there on the client, but just hacking away at it with jQuery and a mix of JavaScript and HTML has led to a less than successful result. And some of these other libraries and the patterns that go with them, things like Angular, can really make it easier for people to have a more interactive page than if they hacked at it in the old school way. So yeah, I see Angular fitting in with MVC today. I have to say that as one moves more and more in the direction of having semi-autonomous clients, my tendency anyway is to have less and less done by the server, therefore less and less need for Razor and less need for all of the MVC-isms. But that's because that's where I'm going with my spas, but there's a spectrum there. And as I said initially, you often can't just start out and say, hey, my whole application is going to be spa. I got to work with all these other things. And so that's entirely doable. And there, Angular is just helping you write a richer page, a much richer page, without getting lost in spaghetti code.
So if you were to do that today, Ward, would you do the initial rendering from the Razor page for the, let's say you're going to show data, or would you actually just omit the Angular code out there and have the Angular code do a get to the server and do all the data work from Angular?
You know, I lean more towards the latter. My initial page is like got some HTML on it and some scripts on it, and then from then on, I'm letting Angular load HTML template fragments and do the data access and so forth. That would be my tendency, but I realize that that's not the only way to do it, and it's quite interesting to see what can be done if you have you've created that model in MVC and you've got that at model tag, right? And you can throw that into a service and then let Angular on the, you know, so now the data is actually, at least a good chunk of your model is flowing down right around with the initial HTML, right? I'm not asynchronously going back to get that initial flow of data. But now I can start sort of pivoting around it with my view logic using Angular to look at that model in the various different ways that are part of the workflow, the user's workflow when they're working with that page. I hope that makes sense. Can you visualize that?
I can.
Yeah, this is really interesting for me because I've been getting a lot of questions from people on how do I do kind of more, you know, like master details or some of these things that don't naturally flow with a simple model and a simple, you know, one controller to do one thing on one model approach. And there's you know, tons of different ways to do it. But half the time the answer is, well, for that part, you may want to use, you know, a mini spa and not convert the whole app to a spa. You know, but just like just this portion of a page or portion of your site, one page in your site maybe is Angular. And so I think that's really, you know, important to keep in there too, is that some applications are great with MVC because they're mostly simpler interactions and they're mostly returning client to the user and you want that search engine friendliness and, you know, simplicity of development. And then some you've got the mini spa approach where you've got just portions where you want that, you know, master details, or you want more complex interactions, or you want client-side interaction. And then you've got others where, no, you want a full-on, you're basically writing a client-server app. And in that case, you just want your web API or whatever back-end, right?
So yeah, it's the full range of those kinds of, you have the full range of those options there. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, I would agree 100%. I think that the majority of my customers today would probably want to Angularify parts of their applications, but not necessarily do the entire application. The kinds of questions that we normally get from customers is, and this is kind of interesting, and I'm glad we're talking about Angular, is I talk to a lot of customers, and a lot of customers come to us and they say, hey, I want to go, you know, do some of this spa type of stuff with my application, and what do you guys recommend? And historically, for the last couple of years, what we've kind of said is, oh, we're going to make sure that we have a great CSS, JavaScript, HTML editor, and you can just use whatever framework you want. But really what we kind of learned over the last year or so is what they're really asking is, choose for me. they really want us to say, you know, choose one for us that, that you guys are going to focus on. And we kind of have made that choice, and VNext will be Angular. Another thing that we find when I talk to customers is, you know, once I get past the technology choice, the next thing is I've run into a lot of customers that have actually tried to write SPA apps from scratch. And they find that their developers, the same developers they're using today to build MVC applications, really struggle when you just say, we're going to go write the entire app in JavaScript on the client. And that's really where we want to come and step in and make that a better transition. Most of the time when I hear from customers, and I think Jesse asked this initially, which was, you know, why would you want to do this? I think as you look at what we call the more modern applications that you see on the internet today, which are Twitter, Facebook, Outlook.com, or Gmail, customers are now seeing these rich websites that almost feel devicey or feel like they're an app more than they feel like a traditional website where, you know, the whole page refreshes every time you click on something and move around the site. As customers experience these sites, they want to make their own sites work that way. And I think that's why it's becoming more popular. At the same time, I think today, at least where we stand today, I think you can actually build an app faster with MVC than you can build an app with Angular, especially if you're a .NET developer. And so I think it'll be a trade-off of that's why, you know, your spectrum will be, hey, I want to go build the next Twitter or Facebook, and so I'm going to write the entire thing as a full SPA, and maybe it takes me a couple extra months to do that because I'm going to be rich like that. Then you've got, you know, somewhere else on the other end of the spectrum, you've got, I'm the MVC developer today and I've got this app, and it would be great if instead of having to page through data, I have to go and click the page button every time. I can just grab a scroll bar and pull it down, and the data will live refresh and go. So, you know, I think though, that's the notion of taking an MVC app and just adding Angularifying a page here or there. I think my customers will be more of that initially, and maybe over the next couple of years, we'll swing further towards the other side of the spectrum where, you know, you're pure Angular on the client and .NET on the back end.
Ward, is this good news for Breeze? Is Breeze, from a purely Breeze perspective, is what Scott's saying an opportunity for Breeze to play well and to participate and to add value, or does what he's saying mean that Breeze would have less to do?
Well, actually, I think it would be just fine in exactly what he's saying. I mean, if it's purely server side rendering, then Breeze has no play. Breeze, for those who don't know, is a library to help you manage data on the client side, kind of in a relational way, and that presumes that it's going to live there for a while, because that's the only real value of having entities and data accumulate and working with it is if it sits on the page for a long enough time to be worth the trouble. So if you're just like presenting a list of something or other and it's a server generated list or it's search results, there's no play there because you're just spitting out data. But whenever you've got data there and there's data entry and the user sort of moving around in it, trying to have validation rules expressed through it, and it gets complex, you know, because it's going to sit there and live on the page in your browser, that's where Breeze plays. So in the kinds of things that Scott was just describing there, there's the full-on SPA separate application where the Breeze thing clearly fits. But even when you take over a particular page and say, I need this page to be livelier, so that there, and a great example I think was John's there with the master detail. Another example is I see pages out there that are effectively wizards, right? You know, the one page is sitting there and they've maybe got tabs, and each tab is a new step along the way to a wizard, and it's people want they're sitting in there and they've got that workflow right in front of them, and they're stepping through the wizard. They don't want each new page of the wizard to be going back to the server. They want a stateful experience right there. The wizard is gathering information that will ultimately lead to some final result at the end of the wizard. Well, that's a perfect example of where you would take a traditional MVC page and angularize it, right? You're still living in one place. And now there again, the accumulation and manipulation of the data that would lurk behind that wizard, that might be a potential Breeze opportunity, because you're dealing with enough richness of data that lives long enough on the page to justify the investment in another library. Does that make sense?
That does make a lot of sense to me. I let me ask a naive question. I'm putting together, as you know, Ward, a Pluralsight course on web API. And what we set out to do was to tackle the issue of master detail, because so many of the courses that are out there only deal with a single table. As part of that, we needed to make choices about using Microsoft Web API controllers or Breeze controllers, and what to put on the client in order to interact with that API. And it felt, as I went through that process, that there were some decisions to make about staying purely in the Microsoft stack or augmenting it with things like Breeze and Angular and so forth. Am I drawing too harsh a distinction, or are those decisions that people do have to make?
I think it's a little harsh, Jesse. For one, that Breeze controller that you're describing at is a web API controller. It's absolutely consistent with any other web API controller. It's just done in a different style. It's done more. And that's only a recommendation. The traditional web API controller is a controller per type, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you pick a book and you build a whole controller around a book, and then if you have another thing called an order, you build a controller around an order, and each of those controllers has the four CRUD methods on it. That's sort of the traditional shape of a web API controller, but that's never been the only possible way you could do a web API controller. And so the Breeze controller that you saw there was simply a different flavor of what is truly a web API controller. So I would say that the Breeze controller is a web API controller. But if you wanted the traditional type, traditional way, by the way, Breeze could also have worked with that. We were just looking for a happy path, right? A path that involved the least amount of coding that you could do to get the biggest bang for the buck. So it fits right in with .NET, the Breeze stuff. So I don't draw that distinction. I do think our audience, to shift it a little bit, is curious about what kinds of pages in their MVC apps are most immediately benefited by having the extra client-side richness that Angular facilitates, and Breeze, of course, facilitates down the road. So we've identified it, master detail, because John, you said that's hard in a regular MVC page, and I, in my experience, mm-hmm. writing wizards that appear on a single page is challenging. I'll bet our listeners would like to sort of have a typology of things that they typically do on an MVC page that they wish had more client-side state and more client-side interactivity. So what other models do you guys think are sitting out there that people will recognize?
You know, those are really the two that come to mind for me. I mean, that's there's two reasons, too. I think there's two drivers for it. One is where you have multiple types of data that are interacting, right? And that's difficult. That doesn't immediately fall into model view controller interaction in a web page, like where it's all server-side model view controller, unless you're building up this big controller, or then you're doing kind of deliver something via MVC, and then also you've got API controllers, and then why am I even doing API controllers if I'm going to... So those complex interactions is one. And then I think the other driver, and you're talking about wizards, really brought that up too, is you're doing a series of steps where it's difficult to maintain all that state, because the server is stateless and kind of hacks around it to persist a bunch of state on the server are difficult. And so you get to this tipping point where it's easier to do the client-side development than it is to try and do like a multi-step wizard in MVC and persist the state and what happens if the user disconnects partway through, or what happens if step 3 doesn't validate, or how do we allow people to go back, or all those things. That's kind of an area where the tipping point is more for the developer's benefit than it is for the user's benefit.
I agree with that definitely. All that doing server-side state management is awful and fraught with all kinds of problems. I mean, you can use session state, but if you've been away for too long, you'll lose that session state, and then it doesn't work when you press the forward or back buttons. You can write code to put it in a database, but man, that's hard. Or you can try to inject it in the page, which is hard too. So I agree 100%. Once you get to anything that requires you to move through steps and stuff like that, That's a great tipping point. It's easier to do on the client than it is to, on the server at that point.
So that's kind of cool. So we now, you know, now we have some criteria for people. They can look at any page and they say, if I find when I'm writing this page that I'm spending time working with heterogeneous types, with a variety of different types and trying to get them all work together on the page, that's a flag. And another one is if I feel compelled to hold on to state somehow, to trick the system some way to hold on to the user state, and I don't know what to do and I'm struggling with that, that makes it a good opportunity. I'll add a third. What about, how do you guys feel about dashboards? A lot of times dashboards look to me like they're really a collection of mini views inside of one view, and that can be kind of challenging to coordinate it, can it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say that's kind of a subset of the heterogeneous data, but yeah, I do agree, and it's all that kind of coordinating things. And of course, then at that point, if you've got a dashboard, you may want more regular updates. You may want things to update, you know, part of it update via SignalR or whatever. And that's a good place to break that out as opposed to keep it as one big thing, you know?
Yeah, I was just going to say that's another great point. You know, we kind of talked about apps or pages that require you to move back and forth and retain state somewhere, like a wizard's a great example. I think anything and you guys were both alluding to this with the dashboard example, is anytime when you want data to refresh live, any live refreshing of data is going to end up having some JavaScript in your page to make that happen, at least to make it happen if you want it to be clean. And so I think, yeah, that's another criteria, Ward, that anytime there's a page that you have, dashboard's a great example of a page like that, where you want data to update in real time on the screen, is a prime example when you should move away from the server side to the client side to do that kind of work.
So now we're giving them more clues. I think whenever anybody's writing a lot of jQuery on the page, it's time to rethink it. Whenever you've got when you find yourself writing a lot of JavaScript on the page, I think it's now time to say to yourself, maybe I want a different pattern here. Maybe I want to have more have a better grasp of how I'm managing client-side execution, and it could be time to turn to something like Angular in concert with my overall MVC commitment.
Yeah, you know, another example of something is if you have a page where you want to pop a dialog box up on your page. So maybe I've got a page, and when I press a button somewhere on the page, or I press a link on the page, I'm going to pop another a kind of like a dialog up. You can do that with server-side code, but it's really gnarly because you're going to have server-side code that's got some injected JavaScript that tries to go hide whatever the result of that dialog and shoot it somewhere else. That's another great example of something that you're going to save a lot of productivity just by moving that purely to the client.
So here's another thing. If you have a page and you want to Ajaxify, I mean, you're sitting there and you just got to say, all right, depending on what the user does, I need to go back and get a little more data. Now, I don't want to redraw the page. So everybody kind of knows how to use Ajax on these days. People seem to know how to use Ajax to refresh a portion of a page. But what I'm seeing in customer code is that they are getting kind of lost in doing more and more and more of that, and they don't really know how to organize their approach to incrementally enriching the page or going back for more data. And again, this is perfect. This is what this sort of SPA technique, this client-side JavaScript HTML enabled by a library like Angular, that's what that stuff is made for. So when you see yourself doing that, not just a little Ajax, but it's really fundamental to the way in which your page works, it's time to take a look at these other technologies.
Our goal is to make it easier to do all the things that John and Ward were talking about. I want to make it easier to use Breeze in Angular. I want to make it easier to use Angular. I want to make it easier to use JavaScript in general in VS. I want us to be the best first class editor for building these types of applications on the planet. We think that we're just going to go take the things that JavaScript developers use today, like Grunt and Bower and stuff, and just build them into the Visual Studio workflow.
I think people want to know that Microsoft is committed to standards. One of the reasons that Angular is attractive is because that it sort of aligns with the forthcoming web standards. One of the reasons TypeScript is attractive is because it aligns with ECMAScript 6. I mean, you guys have really said you're really going somewhere where it doesn't say it's going to be Microsoft's invention. You're trying to join the wider world of web standards, and I think people would really like to know that.
That's correct. I mean, the way we look at this today is, and I think this is a changing paradigm inside of Microsoft. I mean, our team's been on the bleeding edge of this for a while, just because we were one of the first teams to go full open source and to start consuming open source libraries like jQuery and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, as you said, Ward, you nailed it. We want to play as a key partner in the open community of building web apps.